Hey everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and today I am, again, actually not here with Dom this week. He is still traveling all over North America. I actually got to spend a few days with him this week. We were both in New York City for the live Know-It-Alls, which was a fantastic time. I had a great time, by the way, also meeting everyone there. Huge shout out to everyone who we got to talk to. Everyone, as usual, was super cool. So great times as always. And Dom is now gone from New York City. He's spending some time in Canada. He should be back next week. And actually, I'm going to be gone next week. So it's likely going to be Dom here with someone else next week, assuming he makes it all, assuming he gets back to England in one piece. So let's dive into what's going on today. So first up, I'm going to be talking with Austin Trupp, of course, the creator and host of Survivor Maryland, which is a fantastic YouTube series. He's going to tell you all about it. I think it's just great to hear from someone who himself has put together several seasons worth of Survivor story arcs. Like, he's crafted these kind of stories himself, and so it's really great to have him in here for the merge. We really go through how everyone's gotten to this point and where it looks like they're going to be headed from here. So a lot of fun with that. And then afterwards, I had an opportunity to talk to one of my good friends in real life, who is a casual Survivor fan, which is something we've never done before. That I think was fun and interesting. So that's going to be up after Austin. And then finally, I will be diving into the edit zone, going solo again. And it's going to be a bit of a different focus on this week's edit zone than we have tended to dive into in the past, I think. So definitely an interesting one on that front as well. I guess the only other thing I should let you guys know about is this week, I've already done a couple of podcasts actually over on the RHAP network. First, I was on the B&B with Mike Bloom and Liana Boris. That was a ton of fun. You can find that on the reality TV Rehap Ups network. And yesterday I was happy to be on the Post Show Recaps network talking about one of my favorite comedies of all time, Curb Your Enthusiasm, with Rob Cesternino and Akiva Winokur. Both of those podcasts are out now. You can find them. I've retweeted them recently. I am, of course, on Twitter at Colin Stone. Dom, even though he's not here again this week, he is on Twitter at DomHRV. I don't think we have anything else to get out of the way, so let's dive in. And here we are, leading off with Austin Trupp. Okay, so here we are, and with me now this week to break down the latest Survivor Merge episode, someone I'm really excited to have back on the podcast. Welcome again, the host and creator and executive producer and editor and everything else for Survivor Maryland, Austin Trupp. Austin, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing great, Colin. Still recovering a little bit from New York, but I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, I can see your vocal cords are back to at least partial strength after some wild games of Secret Hitler.
Yeah, I don't really view everybody as a liberal or a fascist anymore, which is nice. Actually, I still kind of do. I feel like that's kind of what today's landscape is like. So.
Yeah, I found myself at the store sorting people into those two categories earlier today, just not trusting anyone.
No, except for Charles. You know Charles is a liberal.
He's always got your best interest at heart. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Austin, of course, great times with you and everyone else who was out in New York City this weekend. I take it you had a good time at that live Know-It-Alls yourself?
Yeah, I had a great time. This was my first live RHAP event, and it's been something I've been trying to go to for a long time, but I was very fortunate to have some great hosts in the podcast house, so I really had a great time there. It was really fun to go.
Yeah, we had a fantastically comfortable couch, so you were in great shape for crashing.
Hey, it was it did the job. I think I was out for 9 hours before realizing that it was another day.
Yeah. Well, a big shout out to everyone who was there. It was a great time getting to meet all of you. That is, of course, why Dom is gone this weekend. He's still out traveling. He's actually in Canada this week. I believe Dom will be back next week. And going forward, it should be just in general a lot easier to get these podcasts out much sooner. Just as a general announcement for the show, we're going to have a lot better time scheduling things in the coming weeks. So, Austin, I mentioned at the top of the show, and this is something we don't honestly mention enough, given how good it is. You are the creator and host and everything else of Survivor Maryland, which is a YouTube series that I found out about probably at least a year, year and a half ago, more than that, probably about a year, year and a half, 2 years ago, which I checked out and immediately really loved. Tell the people about Survivor Maryland. I really do want to give you, first of all, a platform to plug this, because this is really, really great stuff. And I know Dom is on board with this as well, that we cannot recommend this highly enough.
Well, I really appreciate you guys, what you did with the podcast. For I will say that after the podcast, I got a lot of comments from people that listened to your show, and picked up some both loyal viewers and people who were like, oh, this is really good. So I mean, people like your recommendations, and I can't thank you enough for providing the platform, because it does make a difference. I mean, you know, I see if I get three more comments on an episode, to me that's like a lot more joy, because I'm not catering to 8 million people. But just to set it up for people who maybe weren't listening to the podcast last time or tuned out and are here for the real Survivor conversation, Survivor Maryland was something I ran when I was in college. So besides all the other titles, I no longer host, but I did host 5 seasons back when I was in college. And basically, it was a semester-long version of Survivor. So I saw being in college as akin to being on an island. You're living with people, you're going to the bathroom in the same place as them, you're, you know, really doing all the stuff except for actually living outdoors. So I put this together, and eventually it became good enough that I felt comfortable making it into a YouTube series and produced some really I am very proud of the seasons I put out. It just was a lot of fun to see it come together. Mm-hmm. And people can watch that on YouTube. I've been editing since we did the last podcast. I have been editing the last season that I ran, an all-star season. So if people, this is actually the perfect time, because last time I was like, oh, maybe sometime in the distant future. Now we're actually like getting fairly close to it. Like I am in the, I don't want to say the final stages, but I'm in like the final leg of the editing, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm.
So it's in production. The Survivor Maryland All-Stars is happening for sure, as far as being edited and released. It's already happened long ago.
Yeah. I mean, I've been editing like actual episodes. They're coming together. Before, it was all kind of a hazy mess. Now I really feel confident that it's not too distant from now. So if people want to give it a watch and watch the old seasons, I highly recommend it. I will say that, you know, people like and dislike fan-made Survivors. I get it. I do feel confident the All-Star season will be fun for any Survivor fan. So it's worth it if you give it the time investment. But I realize, you know, there's a lot of stigmas about fan-made Survivors. If you give it a shot, great. If not, there's a lot of TV out there, so I won't judge you.
Yeah, and Austin, you've referenced you came on probably about a year, year and a half ago with us when we first found out about this to talk to us all about it. And I'll include a link to that podcast in the show notes. And I know for me, at least, that I watched – I believe seasons 3 and 4. I've watched Terrapin Trials and Guts and Glory. What order would you recommend that people check these out in?
If you are skeptical about it, if you're like, oh, I'm not really totally sure if I'm into it, I would watch Guts and Glory first, because it's my most polished. I've gotten a lot better at editing over time. If you're committed for the long haul, then start with season 2, Maryland Outback. Season 1, I didn't really put on YouTube, but there's one player in that from All Stars, so you can learn that when it happens. But if you are totally all in, go with 2 through 4. Otherwise, you might get some spoilers. If you're not sure, watch the beginning of Guts and Glory. Give it a few episodes. It heats up later on. I think you were only 3 episodes in when we did the last podcast, so mm-hmm. I guess it didn't go terribly for you after
I remember. Yeah, in my mind, I was finished with it, but you're right. I just saw the whole thing coming a mile away, I guess.
Yeah.
No. They were both fantastic seasons that I've said before, and I truly stand by, are the gameplay, at least. Obviously, it's not like professional camera work, and there's nothing you can do about that. But the gameplay and just the way the episodes, the stories are told, these kids are really out there playing super hard and putting in a lot of effort. And obviously, the effort on your part, Austin, is tremendously apparent as well. And I once again, just cannot recommend these highly enough, these seasons of Survivor Maryland on YouTube. Austin, having done these seasons and edited so much yourself, do you watch the show any differently than you did before? Like, are we too hard on the producers or the editors or anything? How has your perspective changed having run all one of or several of these seasons yourselves?
It's interesting that you asked that. I mean, I don't I sort of, my fandom of the show was actually pretty recent. It wasn't until late in high school that I even discovered Survivor. So I was sort of developing my knowledge of Survivor at the same time as I was running these. So it kind of goes hand in hand. I don't consider myself like an expert on the CBS show because I do think it's really different in a lot of ways than Survivor Maryland. And that's fine. I wasn't trying to do an exact copy of the show. But I will say that I think the editing, I definitely, sometimes I feel like I can totally see where they're going, and other times I like question where they're going. And so I don't know if that actually helps or hurts my watching the show. But I just think that with the real show, it definitely does just tip me off to that you don't see the whole picture from the edit. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for me to judge. I see people doing really in-depth analysis about the edit. And I you know, having been in that other side of it, I realize that there's a lot that we're not getting. But so I don't know. Maybe it'll come out in the podcast. Maybe I have a different view on things than you with some of the editing. But I don't think it totally changes my viewing of the show compared to a lot of people.
What went into for you making sure jumped out, like when you were watching all the footage, because you would get hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage for right. every season. What would jump out at you as far as seeing something that was like, I have to include this in the show? What went into what made the cut and what didn't?
I don't know. It's more of a feel thing for me. I know some people who do editing of this kind of nature, and they sort of like have a very formulaic approach where they are organized and they write down storylines and they mark timestamps of confessionals, which is great. I think that's probably how it should be done. But for me, it's just sort of, I watch things and I don't actually touch editing until the season ends. And so it's much more of, I know the stories and what's happening. I can kind of go through and be like, oh, this sounds interesting to me. And that's a vague thing to say, but I actually really liked when on Rob's podcast, they did an interview with an editor, like Molly Sock, I think. And she really talked about that there isn't a formula to editing. It's a lot of a feel thing. It's really an art form. And I think that when people really go in depth about the edit from like a confessional count perspective, it's helpful in guiding things. But just from my perspective on editing, I think that Survivor does it pretty similarly. There isn't an exact formula that goes into it. It really is feeling out the stories, knowing where they all go, and then picking out pieces of the puzzle and putting them together.
Right. And I honestly feel like reading the edit is exactly the same way, where there's no set number of like, oh, okay, whoever gets the most confessionals is the biggest winner candidate, and whoever gets the second most is the next highest. I do think, like, of course, there's value in seeing those numbers on like an episode by episode basis to see who's getting like ignored for stretches at a time or who's constantly visible or whatever. But yeah, at least for me as someone who is interested in reading the edit, it's totally case by case as well, where just seeing not so much of someone doesn't necessarily rule them out, and seeing a ton of them by no means makes them like a lead winner candidate in virtually any, like that is often a good indicator. Like the main players will often pop up early, but it is by no means foolproof. There have been plenty of big characters who fizzled out. And I think this season is actually a great indication of that. I think this week where we saw Jessica end up leaving, I know this time last week I was talking about Jessica as like my number three or four winner candidate, and the week before that it was Allie in exactly the same boat, right? I think they're definitely mixing it up and really starting to put forward some of the characters that really, as far as I'm concerned, merit more screen time. And just because they go out relatively early doesn't mean we should take that away from them.
Yeah, when you're editing, you want you get a feel of what the stories are that are interesting and fun. And you have to balance that with the stories that you know have to be told. You have to tell the basic narrative of how the vote's going to go. You want to add some suspense about which side the votes are going. But sometimes there's just a confessional that's interesting. Like a good winner quote doesn't necessarily mean the person is going to win. It means that it sounds good and it makes you think about them and it shows their long-term view. And so I think that I actually think edit reading is good and is interesting, but I think that we have to kind of know that a lot goes into it, more than just we need to show the winner and then everything off of the winner.
Yeah. And again, for me, to go back to the initial point that you made, every season of Survivor, it goes without saying for me that, of course, they're leaving 99.8% of all of the footage they have on the editing room floor, and we are not going to hear remotely all of how this went down. We're barely going to hear a snippet of how this went down. It's going to be based largely around how just the results ended up going down.
Right. And so obviously that's how you can really key into who are the relevant players, who are they trying to make you remember, because they have to cut out so much.
Right.
But, exactly. I think it's fun to look at the narrative of the season where, I mean, this didn't ruin it for me, but it was interesting and it sort of helped me predict what was going to happen in the merge. But you saw this narrative of the heroes and the healers, or sorry, the heroes and the hustlers coming together. I saw that coming kind of over the course of the season. And I don't think I was the only person. There were a lot of people who were talking about that. That was something that really was set up long term. And I think that's cool to follow in reading the edit of what are they showing about these groups and how they're coming together. And then within that, the individual people.
Okay. A lot of the math that I was doing on why it might be the hustlers and the heroes teaming up against the healers was, I guess, literal math of like the healers have a lot of people. And if we don't do something about it soon, they're going to have a majority before we even realize it. Do you feel like they were setting it up with the story as well, that that would be, that those would be the two tribes that would come together early?
I thought so. I said this, I think, to somebody on Twitter before the episode, that I thought that heroes and healers thing would come together. You saw with the healers, I mean, first of all, they're going to show things that are interesting and dramatic. So it makes sense that this would happen. But I think that we saw a lot of cracks within the healers that we didn't actually really need to see. We saw Mike and Joe from day one. We saw Joe and Cole having cracks. We saw Desi, Rourke, and Joe. And these actually didn't even really amount to anything because they all stayed together. Or got voted out in the case of Rourke. So I feel like, yeah, again, it would be in there for sure, but we didn't really see them coming together in any way or overcoming those differences. Whereas with the heroes, we saw Alan and Ashley overcome those differences. We saw Chrissy and JP and Ashley come together after the initial thing with that first tribal and the pairs. And I feel like the hustlers were shown as tight. I mean, we kind of got the lose-on edit from the hustlers, even though they didn't lose that much. And so I felt like you saw these two tight groups and you saw ways that they would come together and emerge, whereas the healers were shown to be a little bit more inept.
Okay, that's definitely a good pickup. Are you feeling like this was a good pre-merge compared to the average Survivor pre-merge?
I don't know. I've seen so much debate about the season, and I don't really know where I stand on it. I feel like it was an average pre-merge. Like, I think the characters were interesting. There were some interesting stories. I like that they didn't shove the theme down our throats too much. Maybe they have shoved it down our throats too much, but I didn't think it was that excessive. So I thought it was pretty average. There weren't a lot of big moments, but I felt like there was a buildup that led to the merge, which was an interesting merge episode.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. The thing that I keep going back to is I really do find the situation to be interesting and the pieces kind of on the board to be in such a position where I'm certainly very curious to see how it plays out from here. I just still haven't found anyone that I'm like super rooting for whatever reason. Is there anyone that you're really rooting for at this point?
I definitely agree with you. I mean, that there's just nothing that stands out about the season and the characters like we usually get. We usually get some really clear stars or some really clear just moments that happen. And I think for me, that's why it hasn't been like a transcendent season or a top level season or anything. I like a lot of people. I do like Ben a lot. I like Devin. I feel like they're both interesting characters, people who are pretty smart about the game. Mike's grown on me. I find Cole to be compelling from like a wild card perspective. I know some people don't like him being out there, but I feel like we have enough people who know the game. And obviously Queen Rimmer and, you know,
mm-hmm. Of course
everybody likes her. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But did you think it was a good pre-merge?
I thought it was okay, but to kind of go back to, I was going to chime in and then finally, I'm finally learning not to just constantly talk over people. I'm working on it. where when you just kind of hesitated, you're like, maybe, like, to me, that's all I need to hear about. Like, if someone's not enthusiastic, frankly, about the pre-merge, I feel like that's a pretty good tell of how they feel about it. Like, I really do think good Survivor pre-merges can often be some of the best parts of any given season of Survivor. And I just don't think there was virtually anything there that the editors honestly just had to work with in terms of making super compelling episodes. I guess just thinking through the votes, they were all unanimous, minus Ryan just leaving Allie in the dark. And then he goes and votes her right out the next week. And that ended up being a giant blindside on the audience, because I think they did a good job building Allie up for the time that she was there. We get to this merge now where the healers, for reasons that you've pointed out and just the mathematical reasons, are pretty clear targets and don't mm-hmm. seem to have it together to the same extent that the other two teams do. I don't think that they did a bad job by any stretch with this merge episode that I think could have in previous seasons been a little more straightforward.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, I realized that I pretty much mentioned all guys for my favorites. I also like Desi a lot, and I do like, I did like Allie a lot, so, but we don't see that much of Desi. So I feel bad I didn't get down to the bottom of my list. But going back to your point, I mean,
well, you are a host of Survivor, so of course all your favorites are guys.
That is fake news. That is fake news. We don't need to get into all that. But no, I think that with the pre-merge, I'm okay personally with the pre-merge that isn't great, because I actually thought the Game Changers pre-merge was incredibly compelling, but we lost so many big characters. I think the sweet spot for a pre-merge is something like Kageyan, where we lose interesting characters, but not ones that are going to define the season. And you have sort of crazy moves and flips along the way where we still keep a lot of our favorites.
Well,
so
yeah, I think I almost much like that, but I honestly, some of my favorite pre-merges are the ones where we lose the less interesting people, but in interesting ways. Like Blood versus Water comes to mind as like a fantastic pre-merge.
Yeah, I definitely co-sign with that. For me, I can tolerate a pre-merge that isn't great if I feel like the characters are worth it who are sticking out. And I do think we have a lot of people who are sticking around. I mean, I think everybody brings something. Some people bring things like that. Otherwise, you know, everybody's bringing something. But I feel like we have the puzzle pieces that are good. And even with the merge episode, I just don't feel like they've really come together to create any sort of explosion yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm certainly not writing this season off yet. I just still feel like it might even be another maybe couple of weeks before we get to the real meat of the season. But I'm certainly reserving judgment, to be sure. I think we could have a really fun middle and end game once we dwindle these numbers down a little bit and kind of balance things out and people start getting ready to turn on this big group that it seems to have come together here at the merge. So I think let's start rolling through. The easiest way I've found to be doing this is just person by person at this merge. Let's go through how everyone seemed to be doing this week and just how they've been doing so far and where they're looking going ahead. I think let's start with one of the guys that you mentioned is among your favorites. I think he's certainly been one of the lead characters this season and has been near the top of pretty much everyone's power rankings as far as I can tell. But this week I've heard a lot that maybe this wasn't the best episode for him. Where did you think Ben fit into this merge? Because we saw him on the right side of the vote, but he wasn't really getting credit, I would say, for how everything played out.
I thought it was interesting to hear so much negative feelings about Ben. Even as we were walking out of the know-it-alls room, people were like, oh, Ben played so emotional. He was just so stuck on the Cole food thing. And that's one of the things that I see editing. I feel like they really overhype those little things to give excuses for people feeling a certain way, whereas it's so much more complicated than that. And I did rewatch the episode today, and Ben even said after the Cole apology, he was like, I still don't like Cole. But, you know, I got to think tactically. I'll work with Cole if I have to. So I actually thought Ben, to me, had a pretty good episode in that he was clearly the swing vote. And I do think he picked the right side. I think his better options were to go with the hero and hustler duo, because it's just a bigger number. And I think that he rightfully would have to be worried that he's at the bottom of this healer group. I think one of the big issues that I saw with the healers is that they – besides Ben and Lauren, they weren't really interested in taking any of Ben and Lauren's allies over there, from what it seemed on the show. Mm-hmm. They didn't talk about taking, for Ben, you know, talking to him about, hey, is there another person we could bring over? Or to Lauren, is there one of your hustlers? Is Devin or something? I did hear a secret scene with Jessica, and I will say, I don't usually watch secret scenes, but I heard Brent 2 weeks ago or whatever, and I was like, oh, he did his research. So I watched them. Spoiler alert is that they're not that interesting. There was so much about Outback Steakhouse. It was unbelievable. But Jessica did say, I've been trying to build a relationship with Devin, but he's just always off doing yoga, so I can't. So maybe they tried. I'm not going to say that they definitely didn't try. But I thought that Ben made the right move here, because he just has more connections from the beginning with that other side. And I think that there's so many mini coalitions within that he's not stuck in any way in that position.
Yeah. To go back to how he looked this episode, I've also watched this episode twice now, and I agree with you. I don't Ben having a really bad episode would not have been my takeaway. I feel like he was once again visible, not to dive too far into the edit zone or whatever, but I feel like we just continue to hear a lot of what Ben has to say about basically every major event of the season, and that continued this week. And yeah, well, he may have gotten hung up on Cole and the food and may have not always been thinking with what we would probably deem like the perfect set of Survivor priorities. I do not know why so many people seem to think he looked so particularly bad this week. And nothing jumped out as like damning content for me. And frankly, right, even if it did, I had this thought the other day, the entire season of us for Millennials versus Gen X pre-merge was very annoyingly saying, okay, it's Adam or Ken and there is no third candidate. Adam's merge was so bad that we just ruled him out right there. So even if Ben did have a bad merge, I wouldn't even be that concerned because we've seen this before.
Right. And I personally feel like every scene we saw with Ben, we either were left debating what the right move was with the vote. We were supposed to debate, I think, which move is right. It's not clear. But with every other scene, I mean, with him and Chrissy at the merge feast, he's the one being like, let's calm down, let's talk secretly.
Right.
With him and Cole. I mean, when have we ever seen somebody look good? I mean, Cole was shown to be stealing food. I don't know has there ever been a time in Survivor history when somebody has gotten a good food stealing edit besides, Sandra and the sugar?
The coconut bandits come to mind.
Okay, there you go. So it's not impossible, but I feel like we then get it from the person's point of view.
Right, exactly. It's we would not be seeing the coconut bandits from the perspective of everyone berating Tyson and Jervis.
Right. About stealing. I feel like that's the easiest way to get the casuals to be like, this person is not smart. Like, oh, why would you? Like, my mom will be like, oh, why is that person stealing the food? How could you not know this? You know.
Yeah, and also I think casuals would probably consider food stealing like one of the most egregious offenses, which it probably is, frankly, on Survivor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so my point is, where did we – to me, there was nothing that we saw with Ben edit-wise and in the game that looked bad for what he was doing. He talked to both sides. He kept communications. And I don't think – you know, to me, I think he's has a charm enough that it's not like Mike and Joe – well, I don't think his relationship with Joe. I don't think Mike is now going to instantly get mad at him and yell at him. I think that he still has that opportunity to work with them later on.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I think that's a great point, and something that if Mike can end up being like, as they've been talking about on RHAP, like the last healer left, I think that could be a position of great power potentially going forward. And that ties into the next thing I wanted to ask you about. Like, if this does turn out to go Ben's way, and it looks like this group will stick to, if they do stick together for a little bit and then need to end up ultimately turning on each other, how do you see Ben getting to the end? Like, what's that path looking like for him as far as you can tell? Is it with someone like pulling in someone like Mike or what?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's been, I don't want to get into like the Jeff Rose commentary. I agree with you. It's very misleading, but we've heard a lot about the end of the season being good. So I feel like there's got to be, it can't just be a Ben, Chrissy, JP, Ashley, like Heroes Final Four. I don't, even with the way the season's been told, I don't really see that happening. But I don't know what, I feel like the Ben-Lauren relationship has been shown. We've got Ben and Chrissy, and I feel like maybe a Ben-Chrissy-Lauren-Mike foursome. Like, I could just be throwing that out of the blue. But Ashley's kind of seen more on, like, the Devin train right now. And I don't feel like Ben, Chrissy, and Ryan can all work together all the way. I feel like Ben and Ryan and Chrissy are too willing to be aggressive to let that happen.
Right, exactly. I think when you have three people that just self-interested, it's going to be really tough. The only time I can really think of something like that working is Coach and Albert and Sophie. And we can debate how well that ended up working for Coach and Albert, by the way. But as far as three really self-interested people, and I think the reason that ended up working is all of them thought, I trust them to take me to the end and I'm going to beat them. And just two of them were wrong.
Right. And I feel like we're getting a lot more negative of Chrissy than I expected. And so I feel like it could be a battle of Ben and Ryan saying, Chrissy's our person to take to the end. We're tight with her and she might not be liked by the jury. So let's take her and let's get a few more numbers. And I guess that's the route I see for Ben, but I'm not totally confident in it either, which, I mean, you know, he's looked great, but I don't feel like he has as many connections as he necessarily needs, unless he can rope in Mike or maybe even Cole long term.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I just really feel like this Ben and Chrissy duo is going to be, they would still be like the top of my board as far as like the big long-term characters, like gun to my head, pick who the winner and compelling losing finalist are today. But I do think a lot of candidates are certainly emerging. But let's, for the time being, just if we want to continue with this hypothetical of Ben and Chrissy, how do you feel about what Chrissy has been bringing to this merge? It seems like she was the one who got the credit for shifting the target onto Jessica and potentially after a rough couple of weeks, turn things around for herself and really start taking, you know, her fate back into her own hands and really shown in there, you know, influencing people socially. She still has that fake idol in her pocket potentially for a rainy day that only Ryan, I think, knows about still at this point. So how do you feel like Chrissy's been doing so far?
I think Chrissy's been playing really well. I think that we know she's smart. She has some very tight relationships. She doesn't have a ton of relationships, but she's really strong in the ones that she has. She was the first one to pick up on. She got Joe to talk about the idol at the merge. He had found an idol. So I think she was always really the driver behind that idol shifting around, at least how it was portrayed to us. I think Chrissy is, to me, I would put Chrissy as the biggest lock for the end game. I don't know if it's a losing finalist or what, but I think that I don't really see any way that Chrissy goes out. This was the week she got the target on the other side. Now I don't think that they're going to go after her again. I think that she is in the clear, and I think that it's really fun to have Chrissy in the game. She clearly shows the passion for applying for 16 years, and she's definitely smart. And she actually, you know, it's one thing for someone to sit in confessionals and say, I'm so smart, but I think she has applied it to the game and has been pretty savvy.
Well, speaking of that, what did you think of Jeff asking her to do the multiplication during the challenge? How do you, as an editor yourself, what do you feel like that was meant to make us think?
At first, I thought people were making were overblowing it, and it was, you know, a fun little moment that she shouted it out the first time. It wasn't Jeff asking. The second time, he then went back and asked to her. Until then, I saw that when I watched again, when they got back to camp, I think JP or someone, not JP, it would have been someone on the other side, Mike or Cole were like, oh, yeah, Chrissy's so smart. So I think it was actually set up to show, oh, yeah, people are a little bit worried about Chrissy.
But I feel like we've seen that kind of stuff, though, from, like, I could see Cochran sitting there, like, spouting off whatever Jeff was asking him for. Like, I don't necessarily think that that's a condemnation on Chrissy.
Yeah, I'm not, whether from an edit or a game perspective, I mean, I think that kind of thing blows over so quickly. But I think people are aware that she is calculating and smart. We've heard some things from exit interviews that she's a little bit cold. And that's why I don't think that she's going to win. But I do think that she is set up well enough that she is going to go far in the game.
Yeah, I think
despite being a threat.
I think she would probably be in like a last longer draft, my number one pick on the board of like just whoever, you know, winning aside, just whoever is there the longest in the game wins. Someone near, you know, creeping up that board and frankly creeping up my winner board after this week. And I will fully acknowledge that we slept on him for far too long, I would say. Devin, I think, had a really big episode here. And I know a lot of people had been thinking that he was looking good to this point, but I think this is a real breakout week for Devin. Are you on board with that?
I'm on board. I think that Devin's being set up as someone who is more, because we saw at the beginning Ryan was the alpha of that duo, and now Devin out of nowhere was really the one calling the shots for the Heroes Hustlers group besides Chrissy at the end. And that was definitely something I didn't expect. I mean, I've liked Devin. I thought he looked smart the whole time, and I think that he, you know, he gives off the surfer bro, but I think he's played a really good game. I do worry that kind of, it's not even a visibility spike. It's like a new sheriff in town spike. Like, I feel like he really did. He was building relationships, but he definitely was putting himself out there as the person pulling people together. And I think he even got commented that when Mike or someone was like, oh, Devin's throwing out your name. So I'm a little worried if they go after one of that big group that he's going to be that threat that they take out.
Right, exactly. And furthermore, seeing these last couple of episodes, what happened to Allie and Jessica, who had just crept up to like number three in my winner rankings the week before they got voted out, I'm with you that I definitely do think Devin leaving soon is also on the table. But after this week, I have to say, a long overdue apology to all of the people that have been trying to get me to believe in Devin for so long. Cause there have been people that I talk to about the episodes regularly, that have been Devin believers for quite a while. And so, I'm certainly starting to come around on that front for sure. Devin, honestly, I'm not sure how many people I would be putting ahead of Devin at this point, just by process of elimination.
I mean, he got like a biblical drone shot. That's got to be worth something.
Yeah, as I described, I was on the RHAP B&B this week. It looked almost like he fell. He had like a skydiving accident.
It does look like it. I feel like it must have been in. There's got to be a shot in Lost with Jack that is something like that.
Oh yeah, there are many shots in Lost like that that you know zoom right in. I'm sure they like start on the person's eye opening and then like peel out or whatever. Yeah, good stuff. Are you a big Lost guy?
I like really hardcore binged it for 3 weeks in college. That was intense. But I'm not like as well versed in the history. I watched it really late. I seem to pick up a lot of these shows very late, but I do like it a lot.
Yeah, binging all of Lost in 3 weeks, like you'll leave that room with just a different philosophy on life.
Oh, my head was spinning. Because there's so much to process, and I mean it was nice that I have like the cliffhangers every week, but
yeah,
I mean after the first couple seasons, I couldn't tell you one thing that happened probably.
Yeah, well if Devin was to fulfill this prophecy of Jack Shepard and go on to be the chosen one here, how do you see this? How is Devin navigating to the end game here?
Well, I do think we saw that he's still tight with Lauren, which I think is important because she is someone who has connections and could be a swing vote later on. And if she can pull in Ashley, Ryan, and Lauren, I mean, that's the four over the Heroes three. So that's I think his best move is to whittle down those healers because I don't really see him – like I think he could bro out with Cole. I think that would work. But Joe's not going to work with him. I don't think Mike's really going to work with him. And so he needs to stick with that majority, keep it solid, and then use that Hustler plus Ashley. Because I think Ryan will think, oh, you know, Devin's a surfer bro. I think Ryan would think he could beat Devin.
That's the thing is I'm wondering how Devin, being just such a big physical presence, I would imagine, if someone like Cole leaves soon or maybe like Joe leaves soon, it seems like if it comes down to any kind of like strength-based competition, it seems like Devin would be in pretty good shape in, where I don't know – how many timelines exist where Devin is getting incorrectly taken to the finals? Like people think they can beat Devin and it turns out they can. It seems like if Devin is a threat to win the game, people will probably know it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think something for me with, and this is going back to how I view the show, but I really ignore the challenges in terms of how I perceive people almost to a fault. Because I think that some of the challenges are so random, but recently we've seen that a lot of people do win a lot in a row. So I can't discount that. And I think Devin will, if he does start to win, I think that's a really good point. I don't think that he's someone that people would drag to the end, not knowing that they are a threat.
Right. Or maybe he wins his way to the end. Now, you know, once those people end up getting picked off, maybe it's Devin who goes on an immunity run to spoil whatever ending would have otherwise gone on or something like that. I could see Devin certainly winning a couple of challenges in a row.
I'm going to go on a limb and say I don't see it happening.
Okay. Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like that's why I'm just – as much as I do agree that with the people who think that there's certainly something to Devin and his being on the show, as much as he is talking about the strategic content. We got like a great email that I'll get further into in the edit zone from Jeff C. this week about Devin and his edit. And I agree with the general – philosophy behind that email, which is that just generally speaking, the thing to be on the lookout for is the like positive manipulation, like the disparity between what you would imagine they would make the person look like and how they're actually making the person look. And so just by that principle, Devin, I think, has to stand out, where it seems like they're showing a really surprising amount for me of him and what he's thinking about within the game. It seems like Devin is often is the type of person that they would often cast aside if he didn't end up playing a major role later on.
I kind of feel like the way they're editing this season is they're trying to show that so many different people have agency. They're thinking, I think that's what they liked about Millennials versus Gen X a lot, where there were a lot of contenders from a game sense, not just an edit sense, and people were making their moves, and kind of like what Mike said, that everybody, it's not just him playing, everybody's playing. And so I kind of think that they've given us the layout of who these people are. There's the firefighter, there's the surfer bro, there's the actuary. We've gotten the jobs. Now we're getting to see a lot of different people, even Jessica, who I think in a normal season, in other seasons, might not get the content of the strategic content, but I think she did get a lot. And I feel like we've seen a really good portion of the people get strategic content showing that they are thinking.
I don't know if
that's a shift in editing or not, but I to me, that's kind of what I'm picking up on is a lot of people are willing to play. Even someone like Cole, who's failing in a lot of ways, definitely has strategic confessionals.
Totally. I think, everyone we've talked about so far and plenty more that we're going to talk about soon, we're getting a ton just strategy-focused content, I would say, even with as little has been going on strategically far as how the votes have actually played out. You're right, totally seeing the game through the eyes of a lot of different people. And certainly one of those people has been Devin's original kind of partner in crime, Ryan. And maybe one of the ways Devin could win is like if he gets to the end with Ryan potentially and the jurors are mad at Ryan. Because at least for me, I feel like Ryan got off to a really good start. And then these last couple of weeks, it feels like he's just I can't even put my finger on what exactly it is, but it feels like he's coming across as almost like smarmier or like starting to get over. I can feel him getting overconfident about his position in the game, and I'm just feeling like a blindside is almost inevitable for Ryan at a certain point. But maybe I'm making this up. You, as someone who has edited many blindsides yourself, am I crazy about that?
I definitely see what you're saying. I think part of it is that the way Ryan talks to gives confessionals, we're kind of going to perceive that no matter what. You know, I haven't been a huge fan of Ryan in the recent episodes because, I mean, A, he's, you know, taking out Allie and whatever. That's, no one likes that. But I think that just from a game sense, he's made some mistakes. And I can't totally tell. I mean, when they have people saying I'm playing this great social game, or my social game is phenomenal, you know, I don't know if we're meant to always take that at face value, because we didn't see anything overtly terrible besides handling Allie wrong. And I couldn't totally tell if – I know a lot of people were commenting that he was being very condescending, whatever, and I definitely saw that. But I don't know if that was being portrayed to show him doing that. And so I think with Ryan, I mean, the interesting thing was Ryan was very quiet this week. Like he said it was the playoffs, and I feel like he was like the Patriots on a bye week.
We got like one, I think we got maybe one scene of Ryan trying to get his pieces in a row. I think maybe during that point where he's talking, like right after the merge, we saw a little bit from Ryan, I think, right when they got to like that merge beach. But you're right. By the end of the episode, Ryan was essentially an afterthought in how the vote was going to go.
Yeah, and I did think it was interesting that we saw the dynamic of Ryan and Devin shift so much this week. I kind of worry that it's the sort of thing where Devin will be out soon and Ryan will have to recover from that and scramble. I feel like with the Ryan archetype, like I feel like if Ryan gets to the end, he probably will win. He'll have been seen as making enough moves. We know that compared to someone like Chrissy, people aren't going to be as mad at him because they expect that from the nerd type. But I think Ryan's just a confident guy a lot more than the show would like to lead us to believe. But I feel like he hasn't gotten the death knell quote yet, like the, oh, I'm the queen bee or I'm running everything. It's more about I'm such a good player.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah. I mean, I was totally with that through the first at least three episodes. I really had a good feeling about Ryan. Like they were really making him look honestly about as good as they could, I would imagine. But it just feels like that's not been the case ever since that ever since voting Rourke out and not handling that well with Allie, and then subsequently voting Allie out. And now after this merge episode, these last three in a row, it just feels like if he was the eventual winner, we'd be seeing Ryan's story slightly differently. And I would actually at this point feel like I would see Ryan, if he's in the finals, more often a losing finalist than the winner.
That's interesting. I mean, there's definitely – there's so much – the real meat of the strategy has not been played yet. We know that. I guess I just think that Ryan is – to me, he's kind of like the Zeke of the season. Like he's there because he's going to shake things up. He's going to make some moves. He's going to be a good narrator. And I guess that's what I feel like they're setting up. So I don't know. I for some reason, I can't see him as a losing finalist. I think it's possible, but anybody's possible as a losing finalist besides like Ben. Mm. So I think he's more of someone who's going to make the moves, shake up that majority, and then either fall by the wayside early or maybe be the winner. But I agree with you. I'm not really seeing the winner for Ryan right now either.
If he does win, do we just need to retire the Cochran, Ian Terry, Steve Moses, Ryan archetype if they hacked the game?
I don't know why. I mean, I think that Ryan is more the Adam archetype than the other two.
Okay.
Which I know Adam is sort of a derivative of that also, But I feel like they're like the Ryan unconfident thing is like a little bit overblown. But yeah, I think you're right. Yes, we need to retire it if they win. It's been quite a trend.
Yeah. Or at least for a little while. Let's give other people a chance. Like I think they cooled off on Mormons for a little while because Mormons were just crushing everyone.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it.
That's a thing. That's confirmed a thing. Just agree and
all the Mormons who are in casting are like, oh wow, this is why.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. Figured it out.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move over. Let's talk a little bit about these healers that are left over, and someone that I mentioned a little earlier, I think could be out of this group a really the highest upside player going forward. I actually think is Mike. I think Mike could sneak through for a little while. He still has that idol in his pocket. It remains to be seen what his real priorities are with that. And I really do think if Mike could find himself, no matter who leaves these next few rounds, in there at some odd number, at like final nine or at final seven, when someone's really looking to make a move, I think Mike could actually be one of the critical pieces at like a real swing point in the game. Where are you on Mike at this point?
I totally agree with you. I think that Mike is somehow miraculously the most calm of all, maybe not Desi, but of the three, of the four healers. Desi is, you know, winning immunity, doing good stuff, doesn't seem to be too much of a threat strategically in terms of what people are perceiving. Mike, I think, is shown as the most strategic, the most sane. Joe's all over the place. Cole's all over the place. I think Mike is definitely in it for the long haul, and I think that we've seen his relationship with Ben on multiple occasions now and with Lauren, and I guess I kind of see it being coming down to whenever this big group is going to fracture, I would feel like it's maybe more like nine. Someone like Chrissy or someone like Ashley or Devin maybe is going to say, let's go for Mike. We've got no relationship with Mike. Let's get him out. He's smart. And Ben or Lauren are going to be like, oh, I don't think this is the smart move for me. And I think that's maybe the avenue Mike has to find the crack.
Okay.
Just a thought. But I totally agree with you that I think he's the wild card of the group that I think can switch things up.
And do you feel like Mike, if he can make it all the way through to the end, do you have any reason to believe that he couldn't win at this point?
No, I don't think we've seen anything bad from Mike. I think that if anyone, Mike might be more of like the I guess he's like the David Wright archetype if we're going to make a distinction. But I think that we've definitely seen Mike. There wasn't a ton of him early on, but he, besides the day one thing with Joe, I think that he looked kind of like a victim from that. And he's been shown to be developing, to growing, and to be smart about the game. And I think that Mike, I expected him to be more wacky and more all over the place. And I think that he's been smart and savvy. And so I think Mike would be respected and would be able to win if he gets there.
Yeah, I think he would be in the mix also if Sprint was still a sponsor of the show, to be like a low-key potential fan favorite winner, which would be hysterical to watch the 100,000 go to like the one rich guy in the cast.
Or the million in the early days.
Yeah.
He needs that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Maybe they need like a $1,000 Outback gift card. That could be the new fan favorite award.
Yeah. That is fun. That's so funny that the secret scenes were like nothing but Outback promos.
I'm telling you, I was like, oh my gosh, I've heard about the steak. I get it. It was really well seasoned. But it's like everybody, you know, everybody says, if you want to get the airtime, talk about the rewards. Everybody knows that and was talking about the reward. Only a few got on there. But yeah, a lot about that.
I don't think I've ever been to an Outback Steakhouse, and I'm honestly not sure if there is one in the entire state of Maine.
I bet if you looked it up, there is. I would put even odds on that.
But okay.
I gotta not get in trouble because I've been known to be a fan of the kind of chain places, but I think Outback is pretty good.
What would get you in trouble about that? This is definitely, at least when I'm here, when Dom hates just food, but I am a very chain-friendly podcast co-host. You can certainly rave about whatever chain restaurants you want when I'm around.
Oh, I have some. I mean, I'm all in like the Applebee's half price appetizer deals or like the Fridays endless apps, and I get a lot of hate from that for not being cultured and whatever. So I have to just, you know, tone it down a little bit.
Okay, that's certainly not going to be coming from me. I'm with you for sure on those.
Okay, do you like Olive Garden?
So we do have, I think, one or two Olive Gardens in the state of Maine, and the closest one is probably an hour away. But yes, when I do go to the Olive Garden once every 5 years, I enjoy myself.
I get to make a big trip. That's like it's the fancy dinner for the night.
That is like fine dining by Maine standards, I think.
I think they should have to compete. Like we should have a reward challenge with like Outback versus Applebee's versus Olive Garden, and they have to compete for the feast or like choose the one. I feel like it'd be really interesting to see like sponsor competitions.
Oh, I mean that's Survivor 48 is the Outback tribe against the Olive Garden tribe. It's going to be like soccer is. All the buffs are going to have, like they used to have Reebok logos. They're just going to be littered in whatever logos.
Oh, man. This is like the Blade Runner future.
Yeah, it's exactly. Survivor is honestly just going to become a Black Mirror episode where people murder each other on TV while wearing commercial products.
Yeah, I always called the Hunger Games Survivor without killing. But, I mean, if you want to spice things up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move over to another one of these really interesting healers, I think. Joe, who after this week, I'm going to say is one of my favorites. I really liked him busting out that idol at the tribal council, where I've always been an advocate for in that kind of scenario. If you can, I think he got the sense that like things were just not going his way, and he just wanted to cause some kind of confusion. He knows he's going to play it on himself either way, and the votes are probably going to go on their side. So why not at least open up the door, right, for them to freak out and maybe have some kind of miscommunication, or maybe that changes things somehow for someone, and you at least give yourself a chance. I really like Joe being in there with that mentality, and I know he's been compared a lot to Tony, who was certainly out there playing very similarly aggressively. Where are you on Joe? Are you a fan, or do you feel like this is just a retread of something we've seen over and over again at this point?
No, I do like Joe. I think that you have to have a Joe to – I think without Joe, the episode is pretty boring. It's just a question of which person they play the idol on, and we don't see the sort of fun at tribal council. I've been feeling like a lot of these tribal councils have been dragging on really long, and this one definitely didn't. I mean, he was really crushing it and giving a lot of people content to work with and play off of, and that's fun.
I mean, Joe strikes me as a player, the type – we've said this about other players in reality before, but like Joe seems like the type who, even if you told him – the best thing you can do this round is just sit on your hands and do nothing and you'll win. Like he couldn't do it.
Oh, absolutely not. And that's what you, I mean, as someone who produces and edits whatever, that's exactly what you want. The people that quote you literally said, and then the person not doing that. I mean, it's great. Like to see someone who is not content with that. So I do like Joe a lot in this season. And I think that, I don't know. I've thought about the idol move he made. And I definitely agree with you that it's good to create the chaos, because otherwise, you know, having a 1 in 4, or I guess a 1 in 3 with 5 healers, 1 in 4 chance of being right. If you're going to play it at that first episode with so little information, that first merge episode, you gotta make a scene of it, because otherwise you're just working off so little. And I think the payoff is not going to be there.
Yeah. Totally.
So I like what he did. Do you think though, I mean, I've heard this in another podcast maybe also, but is the move to not play it once you wear it, or at least not play it for yourself? Like, have we ever seen people call the bluff?
That's the thing, is I don't think we have seen people call the bluff and put the votes on the person that's doing the idol shenanigans like that. We've certainly seen them put votes on people they know have an idol, of course. And many times that makes a lot of sense to get them to like burn it, and you have backup votes on other people. But no, you are right that once you flash that idol, maybe it depends on if you can see them like powwow, freak out, like, oh man, we need a new plan now or whatever. Then maybe I think there's more merit in sitting on it. But generally speaking, and especially when you're Joe, who seems very confident in his ability to keep finding idols, and I think that may be with good reason. I'm still forecasting that it seems like Joe is going to go on to find a third idol based on some of the things that they've included in the episodes that seem like they just wouldn't make sense unless he was to do that. I think Joe, combining all of that and frankly, honestly, maybe even a little bit of the TV factor, I do feel like Joe is going to play it on himself and then feel okay about, I'm just not leaving right now. I'm going to be a favorite to go find the next idol. And even if I can't find it, so what? I'll work really hard. I guess I'm a healer, but I'll hustle regardless and work really hard to get my way out of this spot.
Way to work it in. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's much less downside, obviously, to playing it. So I wouldn't fault someone for playing it on themselves. There's worse moves to be made, okay, not playing it on yourself and then getting voted out. But I do think it's a risk you could make if you're really trying to shake it up.
So that's the question, is do you pull it out than not play it on, not only not play it on yourself, but also not play it on any of the healers and just sacrifice one of them? Are they then mad at you the next round for not even taking a swing or what?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I also think that maybe the answer is that since there's three others to protect, I mean, if it was one or the other person, I think your odds get a lot better. But when it's so kind of Russian roulette, you got to kind of protect yourself or at least lean towards that unless you have some strong indicator that it's going to be somebody else.
Yeah. How do you see Joe continuing on in this game? Do you see any timelines where Joe is like an end game player?
I don't. I just – like who has he had a relationship with outside of the healers really?
Right.
Has it been anybody? I struggle to see where he would be able to find the crack because, I mean, nobody's going to – after two idols be like, oh yeah, it's time to pull in Joe. You know, I think he's sort of just written himself off as someone that's going to survive and fight as long as he can. And unless his side gets majority back, but I just don't see him becoming part of some new majority that involves some coalitions.
Right. It seems like Joe has done everything honestly that he can to put a big target on himself.
Yeah.
And I do feel like Joe, as soon as they feel like they have a clean look at him, is probably going to be going. Although I do think for the next episode or two or three, optimistically, Joe could still be a lot of fun. Looking forward to seeing how that ends up going. So let's move over to another one of these healers. Let's talk a little bit about Cole, who I feel like has had a rough couple of weeks here, including, you know, not only all of the food discussion about his eating habits and everyone, you know, passing out from malnutrition. He also missed this advantage as he was nailing whatever into the shelter. Not a great another bad week here for Cole, I would say. Where are you on Cole, and how long do you feel like he could sustain in this game?
Yeah, I really can't figure out what Cole's end story is because you could see Jessica's story in relation to him. She was strategic. She was kind of being held back by him, whereas Cole was just being Cole. He was almost like a figure more than he was like an object that everybody plays off of as opposed to his own person with like a plan or a future. And I mean, I did say earlier that he's been strategic, but I guess it's been more about reading things or talking about things that he's doing, but there's been no like long-term foresight, and I don't know what Cole really can do at this point, but I also feel like he's been set up as someone that we're supposed to really remember and think of. So I kind of feel like he doesn't go next week for whatever reason, but I don't know. I've been scratching my head about this one too. Like, is Cole someone who could somehow turn it around now? This could be a wake-up call and he can survive, win some immunities. He definitely has immunity potential.
Oh yeah.
So maybe he can win his way for down to six or something. But I don't know. I don't know what Cole's avenue is, who else he can really work with at this point, who's in the majority.
Right. I think like winning his way down to six would probably be best case scenario for Cole. As far as I would be forecasting right now. It really has felt to me like Cole is being set up almost as like an old school merge boot kind of feel, where we're just being piled on with nothing but reasons to understand why Cole would get voted out soon.
Yeah, Cole's story made total sense to me if he was out last week. Now, I don't know if there's a second leg to it. I think this week will be really telling. Is there more to Cole? Can he rebound? Can he learn from it? Because if not, then yeah, he's going to be out within the next 2 weeks probably.
Yeah, and it is interesting, though, to think that so much time was spent early on at that healer's camp exploring the Cole and Jessica relationship, and Jessica's just the merge boot, which I say just the merge boot. Like, that is kind of a big deal, but like, she's not going to be a part of the long-term story. So maybe there is something to the idea that Cole could be a longer term player. I just am not seeing how that's going to happen just yet.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting. I think it'd be interesting to see Cole have a second leg and more of a story post showmance. Post food. Yeah, I did think his apology was good. I think there was a question at the know-it-alls about did Cole do the right thing, and I think Sari said he did exactly the right thing. And I mean, I'm not going to disagree with Sari, but I do think that he played that as well as he could. I think he really owned up. To me, that showed a little bit of like A, human decency, and B, enough foresight or enough willingness to commit himself to being better. So maybe people could start to see him as someone they could drag far in the game, but I would say the more likely outcome is probably not.
Yeah. Do you feel like we will see that advantage that he ended up missing that was in the pile of nails get reinserted later on? Or is that just put in there to make Cole look like, oh, look what could have been for Cole?
That was some good editing. I think that we will see it. I think that they could just have easily cut it out of the show, and I feel like they wouldn't tease something like that just to make us like scratch our heads at Cole. I think we already had enough content on that, so I think it'll come up, and I think that they want these things to be in the game.
Do you think it'll be anything we've ever seen before? Whatever's in that piece of paper.
Wow, that made it sound really epic. No, I think it'll be something new. That would be my guess.
Unlike anything we've ever seen.
A survivor first. Yeah. I think it'll be new. I think that we've seen these many advantages. I'm not sure. I heard some people talking about like the removal idol, blocker idol, whatever it's called, that I think Australian Survivor did, even though I haven't seen season two.
Yeah.
I would say maybe something along those lines.
I think that would be a good power. Yeah, they did that on the second season of Australian Survivor. They had a person got a power where they could negate an idol after it was played. They could say, void that idol, Jonathan, which is the Australian Jeff.
Yes, yes. Also one of Saria's allies.
Australian Austin, as they call him.
Yes, that's what they call him over there.
Austin Australian is what they call
him. I was going to say, do you think that that they have Outback in Australia, would they just call it Steakhouse?
They may have Outback Steakhouse in Australia. I might be just completely making this up and fabricating this because you asked the question. I feel like I've seen that they do have Outback Steakhouse. Although it's, I see what you're saying, where, do they refer to them, like, they wouldn't call themselves Down Under, right? Like, they're there.
Yeah, that seems weird because it's a total, like, appropriation thing.
Right.
I don't know how you appropriate yourself.
Right, right. I remember. I don't remember well enough, but I did listen to the Doughboys episode about Outback Steakhouse. They had a lot of interesting trivia about Outback Steakhouse and all of the regional distinctions in there.
Interesting.
Yeah, I highly recommend the. I brought it up a couple weeks ago too. I cannot recommend strongly enough the Doughboys podcast for anyone who, like Austin and myself, is into chain restaurants.
You've just sold me. I think I do need to download this chain restaurants.
It is very, very good. I would highly recommend it to any. It's hysterical. It's two comedians, by the way, who talk about chain restaurants, and they're so, so good.
Okay, I will give it a listen. Yeah,
it's fantastic. Yeah, just go pick out whatever restaurants you like. They're fantastic. I guess let's close out on the last remaining healer left in the game. Our immunity winner this week, another actually Australian Survivor shout out. This is a challenge that they've done on both of the two most recent seasons of Australian Survivor, where they keep the ball rotating in the circle. A really fun challenge that I always enjoy. And Desi is our big winner here, although we are not getting to see a whole lot of Desi in general game turns, at least to this point. Where do you feel like Desi is going to fit into things here? Because I frankly could see her going out as soon as this week or like at final five.
I feel like based on this, I feel like she's going to be based on the lack of seeing her, I feel like she's going to be out pretty soon. And it's really disappointing to me. She was my winner pick. I don't think I was alone in that. I liked what I saw from her. And I feel justified in that a lot of people were worried that she'd be such a threat early on. But it seems like people like her. It seems like she's had decent connections with people that she's been with. I think it was really hard for her that she got swapped onto a tribe that was so polarized. With that first move and really being swapped with Joe, I feel like that just limits your options, your alliance options.
Yeah, for sure. That's running bad right there. And maybe Desi could be that person that I was thinking maybe would be Mike, who is that like last healer standing, who could be like a good extra vote for someone else, who then finds herself in like an alliance that, like I mentioned though, that like creeps into the final five. But I'm really just not seeing how anything beyond that seems realistic at this point for Desi.
Yeah, and not even with the edit. I mean, just game sense. We don't her relationships with anybody. We saw her with Jessica. We saw her with Joe. And, I mean, that's, you know, unlike Mike, who has those connections to the majority and two of the swings of the majority, she just doesn't have that. And I did like the only secret scene that was really strategic was Desi was talking about, you know, immunity is a double-edged sword. I'm where I could put a target on my back, but at the same time, I didn't want to lose. I could have gotten voted out right away. Obviously, you never know. So, like, it's not like she's not thinking. I think that we're just not seeing her story, and I think that she's really boxed in with her options.
Yeah.
I would love to see her kind of be like, you know, screw this alliance. Like, go to Ashley and Devin. I guess that's really her only option. She did get that set up with Ashley and Devin. But if we're going to go back to editing in terms of stories, I think that was probably more about tension on that tribe versus long-term, I don't know if she's going to flip with them.
Right. That is the thing, is we saw on that post-swap tribe that maybe, you know, Ashley and Devin had linked up and were talking about feeling good about Desi potentially and bringing her in to vote out Joe. But I don't know how much of that was just, if we have to go back to another tribal council as this group, that's the game plan, versus we genuinely feel good about Desi going forward.
Right. But I think she has the right instincts, but just not the options. And I don't really see an Ashley, Devin, Desi final three happening. I don't think that's the story we're being told.
Right. Yeah, nor do I. But I guess let's transition into Ashley, who I've always left kind of on the outer periphery of my radar, because I do feel like we've seen a little of Ashley more or less each time, although honestly not a ton of Ashley this week, and that is starting to concern me. But I do feel like Ashley was at least somewhat visible during the pre-merge and shown playing well whenever she was on screen. Where are you on Ashley at this point?
I like Ashley too. I mean, I should just say I like everybody. I think I like all of them, but I just like, there's not that much to say about Ashley. I think she's been pretty smart. I think that she is calm. She has a good poise about her. She's in the majority. You know, you can't ask for that much more, but she's not driving the narrative. I think in another secret scene thing. Okay, there were two good secret scenes. I lied. There were two good ones and the rest were bad. Desi and Lauren both got strategic ones. Lauren was talking about the people that she hadn't met before, and she was saying Ashley seems nice, but she's reserved. And I thought that was really interesting, because you can't really tell when someone's shy on an edited show. You're not seeing the rest of the hours, you know. But I guess that kind of sums up why Ashley is present but not dictating. She's not, you know, she's not the outspoken person like Devin right now, or like Ben that are, or Chrissy that are involved in so much. And I think that's not a bad move for her. I think Ashley's in it. I think she's one of my, you know, last longer picks for sure. But I don't know. I'm not seeing the Ashley winner thing at this point.
Right. I think, honestly, if I was out there on the island, we say this from time to time, like if I was able to go out there and watch the game in real time at this point, I would probably be investing in Ashley as far as like winner stock. But just because it seems like we haven't seen it's been a long time since it seems like we've had Ashley's take on like the strategic angle and like the way the game is actually playing out, to the point that I'm just concerned about the lack of focus on that front, as far as that doesn't tend to be a thing for the people who go on to win the game. We tend to hear from them about how they feel the game is going and how they hope it goes from here. And so Ashley, while I agree with you, I think could be in there for a really long time, and I do think is in there playing pretty well as far as I can tell. I just don't know what the timeline is where Ashley turns this around and turns this into a victory, essentially. Although maybe if she did, it would involve JP. Do you feel like do you feel like she's going to just stick with JP, or do you feel like she could branch out?
I don't know if we saw any of the two of them back together this week. There was no focus on that. I think her ride or die is Devin right now. I think that we should believe that her and Devin are tighter than her and JP are. I think that she probably was worried about the target of her and JP. And also Devin just seems like a much more useful alliance member, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I would, my read is that those two are now have surpassed the Ashley and JP thing. And JP seems more tied to Chrissy at this point in terms of strategically.
Okay. I think I do probably agree with that. Where do you think JP is within the game at this point? You're right. We didn't see virtually anything from him this week now that we've merged, which you might think even that's surprising just on the sheer grounds of what a threat I think he would conventionally be viewed as at the merge. But nothing along either positive or negative for JP here this week. How is he going to play into how all of this goes? Or is he just going to be around pretty quiet until his number gets called relatively soon?
I think you're going to see the second option. I'm not seeing the JP breakout. I'm not seeing him be like, I'm not sure about this majority. Maybe there will be a week where they need to fight for his vote. It could be like Chrissy trying to pull a side together and Devin and Ashley trying to pull a side together. Maybe that's his upside in terms of having a real impact. But I feel like he's, you know, solid number in the majority for as long as it lasts. Maybe they worry about him as a threat later on. But for now, I mean, you've got Cole, you've got Desi, you've got Devin, who are all athletic people. Also, Joe is a big enough target in his own right. I don't see JP as being in danger at all, but I don't see him making any big moves.
Yeah. I think JP is frankly just along for the ride at this point, and whenever he goes, he'll go, and it will be a pretty slow Wednesday, I would imagine.
We saw the JP Boot episode. It just happened that Allie went home.
That's right. We already saw it. It just didn't go through. And Austin, the only other person I believe that we have left to get through is the aforementioned Queen Rimmer, Lauren. How is she going to end up impacting how this game goes? Because I frankly, at this point, have a hard time seeing how Lauren leaves anytime soon.
I think Lauren's in a good spot. I think that she I don't know what I know people were saying that maybe it was the right move for Ben to go to the Heroes Hustlers, but for her, it was to stick with the Yawa, the Healers. I don't know if I agree with that, because I think that Lauren does have the Hustlers connection. In her secret scene, seemed much more open-minded about the two options than what it seemed on the show. And I'm not sure which one was more real, because we did see her very focused on staying with Yawa in her conversation with Ben. But I'm not totally sure. I feel like she at least saw the strategic value of both sides. She said, at my core, I'm still a hustler. Even with the Yawa tribe, I'm still labeled as a hustler. So, I mean, there's no reason why she has – I think she has avenues within that. She's got Devin and Ryan. She's tied with Ben. So I think we're going to see more from Lauren in terms of making decisions. She definitely was more of the beta in the Ben and Lauren duo, but I think that's a duo that we're going to see still have value and still have importance even after they've made their decision.
Yeah, I'm really excited about where Lauren is heading for the rest of this game. I really think Lauren could be one of the central decision makers when this big group has to finally turn on each other, potentially if they spend the next couple weeks taking out Cole and Desi or whatever.
It's exciting to see a Marylander do well.
Yeah. Okay. Can you at least vouch for the fact that people in Maryland have that O accent?
It's a little bit of a Baltimore accent. I'll give you that. Okay. It might just be a harbor fishing thing. Maybe that's what it is.
It works in the
ports. You get the O when you go by the boats, the boots. That's the best theory I have. But because I know she's not from Maryland, but I think you're right on the Baltimore accent. It's not crazy.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
As a Maryland expert, someone who's lived here my whole life.
Survivor Maryland accent is the name of Lawrence. Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing how Lauren fits into how the rest of this game goes, because as I've mentioned, it just seems like there's so many people that are so overtly threatening that I really don't know how Lauren, unless she really starts rubbing people the wrong way or for some weird fluke incident happens or whatever, and the tables turn on Lauren, maybe she gets a little ahead of herself or gets caught in some major lie. I just really don't see how Lauren's going to be leaving too soon, and I am very excited about the prospect of Lauren with potentially some big decisions coming down the line, I think. And if we want to talk about the ultimate big decision, potentially, I could see if we do have that tie scenario that people are talking about coming in. I am looking potentially at Lauren as a losing finalist, and I would love it to be Lauren who breaks that tie. Would be incredible.
Oh, that would be amazing. Besides Lauren winning, that's now the outcome I'm rooting for. Man,
I'm rooting for either that or if it's a tie, I want either Lauren or Ryan breaking the tie.
Oh, I'm all in on the Lauren. I think Lauren deciding between Ben and Mike. Can you imagine that? That's wow. That would be fun.
Yeah. Do you feel like Lauren has any winner upside? Am I underselling Lauren here?
I think that she's been surprisingly good enough that she could. But I guess I just think that there will be other people who emerge more so that that was sort of contradictory. I don't see it, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility yet. I feel like I have ruled out a lot of people. I don't think I've ruled out Lauren. I think that there's still a possibility. I would love to see it. Maybe I'm just being hopeful. But what is there not to like about Lauren? And if she did get to the end, she's got a story. And she's played a pretty good game. She's been on a number of tribes. And if she does it to the end, I would think that she's had to do more.
Yeah.
The issue would be... Go ahead.
Well, yeah, when we talk about how sometimes the mom doesn't have too much success at Final Tribal Council, I don't know that that would be an issue for Lauren. I think Lauren would have an easy time presenting her case as this is why I did what I did and really owning her game.
I think the issue is like that she might be seen as the lesser of a pair. Like, I think that if you were to go to a vote right now between her and Ben, I mean, Ben made the move. Ben made the decision. She even said, "You let me know. That's what we're going with." So from that perspective, it's and that's I do think there's an issue sometimes where in a pairing, people just assume the guy is the dominant. I do think that Lauren put herself in the beta position. I don't think that's a bad move. I just think that that could be the downside for her, is that she does get taken to the end in that sense, and she actually didn't make as many of the moves, and she sort of got boxed in. Like, she might not want to make the decision tonight, but she might have wanted to do something else. You know, kind of like the Hannah Shapiro in a way, where she is strategic and she is smart, but the decisions she made or the decisions that happened weren't necessarily hers or weren't necessarily seen as the right ones.
Yeah. No, I think that all of that makes sense. Let's talk a little bit quickly about our merge boot this season. Jessica, what do you make of Jessica, of the target falling on Jessica, and just her being a Survivor merge boot? It does feel like these last few seasons, the female within the minority alliance that we don't think is likely to have an idol is becoming like a thing for the merge boot.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think that the new merge boot is whoever's not the merge boot, because the merge boot's going to think they're the merge boot and play the idol. I think that's the new norm. But I do think Jessica, I mean, as a merge boot, it's not the same as me as like a, maybe like a Kelling Remington. It's a little bit more of a passive player. I think Jessica, she got a lot of content about how she was putting things together on her side. After the vote, after the challenge, she went really quiet. But in the first half, I mean, she was pulling together the strings, pulling together the numbers. She had the right plan. And from her secret scenes, I know that she was trying to pull in more numbers. So I think Jessica got a lot of interesting stuff. I really liked when she, on the tribe swap, focused on her relationship with Mike, knowing that Cole was liability. And I hate that she ended up paying the price. But, I mean, I think as soon as her name got up, we all knew it was happening, right? I mean, to me, that was what was the clear what was going on as soon as that backup plan got mentioned.
Yeah. Did you like Jessica on this season?
I did. I would say she was near the top of my favorites. I think that she had a compelling story. I don't mind people who get into showmans. Like, I get it. Like, Cole is an incredibly good looking guy. I can understand why someone would fall for that. And I also think that she showed a lot of game chops. And I think that it's unfortunate that showmans might have limited her. But I don't even think people didn't get her out because she was in a showmans. It was because she wasn't seen as playing the idol. So it's not even like that necessarily ruined her. Maybe it hurt her chances to get majority. So if you put her in another situation, it could have been better. But I did like Jessica. I think she has a lot of potential, and I think that she showed a lot of it too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I feel like Jessica definitely had a lot of untapped potential here on this season, where generally speaking, I feel like Jessica may be in a timeline where she doesn't get mixed up with Cole so quickly, or just finds herself in a merge with a more favorable dynamic as far as the pre-merge numbers are concerned. Like, the healers are not viewed as such a big target. Jessica, for me, if she had been on like the other side of things, I think honestly would have been one of my front runners. Again, if I was like out there betting in real time, if Jessica was in a more favorable situation, I certainly think Jessica is someone who could do very, very well at Survivor under different circumstances.
Yeah, when I was casting for my All-Star season, which was kind of like a second chances, the big things I was looking for was someone who I knew I wanted to bring back, was someone who showed potential as a player, cared about it, and also had way more to their story than they could have told. And to me, Jessica is like a perfect person to bring back, not to get into that realm, but just because I think that she's not the type of girl to me that would always get in the showman. She's not like out there like a Big Brother player looking for the plus one. You know, I don't think that's what she's there for. It just kind of happened, and it was also a close ally for her.
Yeah.
But I think that there's way more to her story that we can see.
Yo, I mean, to get into exactly that realm, because this is the next thing I was going to ask you about, is I'm with you. I would love to see Jessica potentially get a second chance here. And I talked about this as well on the B&B with Mike and Liana this week. I feel like this cast, there are six, seven, eight people I could see them potentially bringing back here. Who out of this group are you feeling like you are willing to sign off on fill in the blank 2.0 so far? Because at least for me, the list is pretty long.
I'd be willing to say anybody besides JP. I don't mean that as a knock on JP. It's just we haven't seen it. But I think that obviously it's granted, or we have to judge it based on what happens later on with a lot of these people. Like, I know Adesi hasn't stood out enough. It wouldn't happen yet. But she's someone I still think has potential. I think that everybody in the cast so far, I think, could be worth it. The standouts for me would be obviously Ben, if he doesn't win, I think would be a lock to come back. I think Chrissy would be fun on any season. And I would like to see people like, I mean, you could bring people like Devin, Ryan, Lauren, who's such a unique and fresh casting character, and Mike. I know I'm, again, saying people I like, unless you got a lot of names. I mean, obviously, Allie from the pre-merge. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you have people who – and that's what I think we saw in the cast at the beginning, was that a lot of them are likable. A lot of them have potential. A lot of them know the game decently well. And so you could stick them on any season and feel good about it. In terms of who has the best story that we would want to expand on, Allie, definitely for me, Jessica, and going back to the pre-merge, I don't know, is there anybody else who really stood out? Alan Ball, for sure.
Totally. I'm not going to be the person who mentions Rourke here because I've done enough of the Rourke standing on this podcast. But no, I'm with you. I think there are a plenty of people that would be fantastic second chance candidates if they, you know, in the event that, as will be the case for most of them, they go on to not win the game.
Right. So if we're going to talk about Wentworth upside, to me, Jessica is the real one with that because – she's definitely strategic, but she got locked up. Like Wentworth's issue, quote unquote, you know, supposedly was her dad. Jessica's was Cole. Like that to me is the exact archetype of someone that people are not going to take too seriously, but has a lot of strategic prowess.
Right. And she was in the perfect scenario where she didn't have to screw anyone over her first time. Not big on screwing people, it turns out, Jessica.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Austin, give me your, I guess, winner and final three picks right now with the gun to your head.
Oh, man. I'll still go Ben. I think that whether it's edited or not, I just think that he's got enough of a charm and enough connections to make it happen. I know I'm running the risk of the fourth place fallen, fallen angel edit or something.
Yeah, semi-robbed goddess, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, I would still go Ben. And I guess I would say that to me, the other two are like, I'll say Mike or Chrissy.
Okay.
Maybe Lauren's sticking in there. That's what I'm feeling right now. That would be a pretty stacked final three, Ben, Chrissy, and Mike. But I guess I could see that happening the way things are laid out.
Yeah, I think at this point, for me, I would still be leaning – Ben and Chrissy. I'm thinking Lauren is going to be in there potentially. At least maybe that's just wishful thinking. But
did
I'm
maybe sliding in, or did I say something else?
No, you said Lauren or Mike sliding in. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I would love to live in that world. So, Austin, of course, Survivor Maryland on YouTube, very easy to find, and fantastic stuff. I want to go once again back to that. I cannot recommend strongly enough that people go and check that out. I know that we have an off-season coming up, and I think that would be the time to just sit there, sit down, spend a weekend just binging a few seasons of Survivor Maryland, and you will certainly not regret it.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think the off season is a great time for it when you're, you know, fiending for content. And I would expect that my goal has been to be sometime in this off season to have it out. And in terms of All Stars release date. So there's something to look forward to and there's stuff to watch currently. So if you have not given it a shot, yeah, highly encouraged. I appreciate you talking about it and praising it. It really does go a long way.
It's very
hard to get people to switch from the real show to a college thing.
Not only that, I mean, I'm sure when All Stars drops, I would be shocked if we don't end up doing some podcasting about it. It really is that fun to watch and talk about.
And I will say the main twist of All Stars combined with everything else with the cast, whatever, I think will be – give a lot of strategic elements that we've just not seen in Survivor or a lot of other shows.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. Austin, where can people find you on Twitter?
People can find me on Twitter at AustinTacious with two S's, so AustinTacious, Tacious, TacioUSS. You'll see me playing Secret Hitler with plenty of people. But yeah, find me there, and YouTube channel Survivor Maryland, just search it up, shouldn't be hard to find. There's also some other good, I should give a shout out because I know they're working really hard on it. There's some other really good college Survivor games. It's been actually growing a lot since mine, which is really cool.
Nice. So who are they? Let's give them a plug.
Survivor Ohio State with Will Wall, highly recommended. just put out their first season, and it was really, really good. Like, they had big goals, big aspirations, and they were way ahead of where I was when I was doing my first season. So, big shout out to them. There's also Survivor Boston. I don't want to name all the names. It's like 15 of them, and I don't want to leave anyone out.
Okay.
But they were one of the first ones that reached out to me. But a lot of really cool things going on with that, and it's been really cool to see it grow in that sense. If you're a college student and you want to start one, then reach out to me and talk about it.
Yeah.
You don't need my permission, but if you want advice. Yeah, it's not like a franchise. I want to make that clear. But people do ask me, so.
Yeah. Cool. Ostentatious on Twitter. Austin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Yeah. So that is going to do it for this part. We will now send it over to a conversation I had this morning, actually, with a good friend of mine in real life. I think I hope people enjoy this. I enjoyed certainly getting a more of a casual perspective. So we will get Austin out of here, and we will send it to that, and then stay tuned after that for the edit zone. Okay, so here we are, and before we get into the edit zone, I wanted to do something that we've never really done before on a couple of different levels, and I really am a believer that it's important to know how the casuals are feeling about the season, and I'm just personally terrified of the Facebook group, the Survivor Facebook group, but I do really feel like CBS is, of course, tailoring how they're telling the story to the people who were just tuning in on Wednesday and not really thinking about it much beyond that, which I think is the vast majority of the audience. So for the first time, we're going to bring someone in who I think qualifies in that capacity a lot more than probably anyone who is podcasting about Survivor or listening to Survivor would. And also for the first time, this is going to be someone on the podcast that is a friend of mine in real life that I've known for a long, long time. Please welcome to the show, Anna. Anna, how are you?
Hi, Colin. I'm so excited to be here. First time, long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No,
I've been waiting to say that for so long.
Oh, I've been, trust me, Anna, I've been waiting to have you on the podcast for so long, you know. Yeah. So, Anna, I want to start off with a question just to gauge where you're at. Have you ever watched an episode of Survivor more than once?
Not unless you've made me watch certain scenes again, I don't think.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, so you tune in, not even on Wednesdays, but you watch online a day or two later?
Yes, I feel like you always text me, like, Thursday morning, like, did you watch yet? And I'm always like, no, like, I went to bed earlier, I was busy reading my books. But I'm certainly a fan, but a casual fan, so I usually watch it Thursday night when I can fast forward through like commercials and whatnot. Thursday, Friday, sometimes Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah, we're casual podcasters. Yeah, we're the same way. A lot of Survivor podcasters, they like to get stuff out like Thursday or Friday at the latest, and we're like, yeah, we'll see you Monday. This week it's even a little later just because of a lot of travel. But Anna, who were some of your favorite players from past seasons?
I really, for some reason, like, loved Hot Jenna, like, Peanut Butter Jenna. And then, like, of course, like, Boston Rob, Spencer, of course, Kelly Wentworth, who, like, I feel like you love. And then do you remember, well, of course you remember Tina? I really liked Tina.
Tina, the older woman from Tennessee.
Yeah,
she was fantastic. I guess she wasn't the older woman her first season, but yeah, no, Tina, incidentally, a big-time backgammon player, so always been a big Tina fan. Where are you on like Rupert? Do you like Rupert?
I think that he seems really nice. I don't know if I like, I felt like he was like a fan favorite. So sometimes I'm one of those people who are like, no, I don't want to like the fan favorite, but he was very nice. My like best friend who you also know, who's like the nicest person in the entire world, like just like the nicest soul ever, like loves Rupert. And I feel like that's like, I don't know. He was kind of boring, but nice. I liked Tony, like, and I know we have like Tony Light this season, so I don't know.
Did you like Ozzy?
I thought he was hot. Yeah.
Okay, that's what it comes
and
down to.
Colby.
Colby, okay. Just
and
because
Malcolm.
He's hot or what?
So now we're just gonna go with the hot guys.
Okay.
No, I mean like it's. I think like Survivor is a show that does cater well to like the young, hot, like fit guy. So they're like easy to become favorites too because they win a lot and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a fair observation. Are you liking this season so far?
Like yes, I think like I like always enjoy Survivor, right? Because it's like it's I feel like it's made for me to enjoy and like pretty easy to digest, and there's always like some excitement. I don't like love the cast that much. Like there's nobody I feel super super strongly about. Like usually I have somebody that I'm like rooting for pretty early, and I don't feel like I have that as much this season. I guess like I'm very into Desi, but that could just be because she's also very beautiful.
Like, I feel like there's a trend emerging here.
I can't help it.
The people that you like.
It's TV. Well, also she won. Like she wins, you know, like she won the whatever immunity mm-hmm. thing, didn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah, she, right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just checking.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. Who do you like the most? Is Desi your favorite this season, or who are you rooting for to win at this point?
I think I am rooting for Desi. I don't think that she's going to win.
Okay.
I think, like, Ben or Chrissy will probably win.
Do you like them? Or are you into that? Or what makes you say that?
So, as I have continued to watch Survivor, and maybe it's because I've gotten older and wiser, I've realized that reality television is actually edited to make you feel certain ways. And it's not just, like, what happens. So I've been starting to pay a little bit more attention to that. And I think like this season, for some reason, it feels like it's been like very clear who they're editing to make us like a little bit more, or who is just who I'm more familiar with. Like there are people whose names I like can't even remember. And I'm like, well, they're not going to win because I never see them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that is a good litmus test. Like I think there are plenty of just weekly Wednesday viewers that could tune in. And even though like JP, for instance, was a focal point a couple of weeks ago, he could show up next week and many, you know, a decent percentage of the audience.
I forget about him. I don't. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're not alone in that. I think there are people who fit into that profile. And I think you are right that Ben and Chrissy, it seems like they're
yeah.
just not
and
letting
I mean,
us forget about
Joe
that.
Too. But I don't know if I think he's going to win. I feel like they do that because he's like good TV.
Well, you mentioned, yeah, you said you called him Tony Light earlier. Are you into Joe as someone who was into Tony?
Like, I don't know Joe at all, obviously. So I feel bad being like, I just don't know if he's as smart as Tony, but I just don't know if he's as smart as Tony. But he seems to really think that he's smart, yeah. which I also think makes, like, for really good TV, because I think at some point, like, he's going to look like an idiot, right? And that'll be, like, kind of satisfying.
Right. That's the thing is when you play the Joe or like Tony style, it's great TV. Like this week where he's at the tribal council and thinks things aren't probably going to go his way and busts that idol out in the middle of it to try to like stir stuff up. That's fantastic. But if you do anything short of what Tony did and win, it's probably going to get turned on you at some point.
Yeah. So I do feel like that's kind of like what's being set up. Like, I don't feel like they're trying to make us like him at all. Like I felt like with Tony, like he played like really hard and like, I don't know. I just felt like they were still like making him like humanizing him, making us like him. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And not getting the same from
no.
Joe. Yeah. Where are you on Ryan? He seems like someone who's been pretty visible as well. Are you a fan of his or is he getting too sneaky for you or what?
I thought that he was kind of, well, I didn't really care for Allie, but I also didn't feel like he, like, handled the Allie situation very well. So, like, I thought that was interesting. And he's another one kind of like Joe where I feel like Ryan thinks he's really smart. And he, I mean, he's obviously intelligent, but I don't think that he's very likable. So, like, I'm not, like, drawn to him at all. And I'm, like, kind of over the, like, nerdy guy on Survivor thing.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, do you like Dr. Mike? Because I'm with you on, I feel like Ryan has been fading a little bit, at least for me these last couple weeks, but ascending for me has been Dr. Mike.
Yes, he's so cute.
Yeah, but he fits in, I think, to that like nerdier archetype. Actually, I don't think you even watched the season, the Millennials versus Gen X season, but there was a guy on that season that Dr. Mike is very much like, and this kind of older, nerdier guy is becoming almost a new archetype. It sounds like you're into him, though.
Yeah, I'm like all into like what CBS is feeding me with Dr. Mike. Like, I like think he seems like so nice. I want to like ask him for advice about like my like love life. Like he just seems like a nice guy. Like I would want to be stranded with him for sure.
Okay. So I'm with you on that as well. I think Mike might be the biggest like casual fan winner of these last couple episodes. The general like scuttlebutt that I'm hearing is a lot of people coming down on Ryan and Ben and Chrissy and some of the more visible people who are now taking, I guess, a bit of a worse turn story-wise, but it seems like Mike and also Devin have been on the rise here lately. Do you like Devin?
What is the deal with Devin? I, like, don't get it, honestly. He, like, I feel like I keep hearing, like, you've talked about Devin a little bit on the podcast. I, like, could not pick Devin out of a lineup.
Even though he's hot?
He's not to me, but I mean, like, he is probably objectively good-looking, but I don't know. Like, I just feel like he's not, like, he's got no, like real, like, charisma so far. As like, I don't know what his personality is like, which is maybe, yeah. I guess, like, maybe a good strategy to take in Survivor. Like, I would be a terrible Survivor player because I, like, talk a lot and I would just be a disaster. But he is definitely keeping, like, a low profile, which is maybe good in the game. But I think it's hard as a viewer because, like, I just don't care about him.
That's the thing for me, and that's why it took me so long to really buy into Devin. Is I think that's the perfect way of putting it, is I just don't see the charisma on screen for me. It doesn't seem like he's doing a whole lot that, certainly compared to some of the other people, that is meant to like jump out and grab my attention. But at the same time, I just don't think Devin's that kind of person. If you're like the editors in this case, what are you going to do if he's not out there giving any kind of like dynamic confessionals, if everything he's saying is, you know, relatively monotonous and not, he doesn't have just that big personality that you're hoping for, but he could still go on to win the game, I think. And if he does end up doing that and you want to show him in a good light, I think they have at least been trying to do so. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Devin were to win, that this would be how he would look, I think is the way I would put it, where it does seem like he's just getting, when he's on screen, while it's not the most entertaining stuff, it's at least positive stuff, which I think is the important thing.
Yeah, they're, I guess, just keeping him kind of neutral. Is he, I can't remember, did he and Ryan vote together this week, or?
Yeah, so okay. The way the vote ended up going is the Heroes and Hustlers teamed up against the Healers.
Right.
Because it was the Healers had 5 out of the 12 people.
Which, like, also, like, every time I talk to you about Survivor and a new season comes out, like, how are we still doing these, like, weird names and stuff? Like, can we just be the yellow team? Like, I never call them the Healers. Like, it's unreal. But
yeah, I was going to ask about that. But I didn't think you really had that you cared too much about the theme, so I didn't want to waste your time because I know you're at work right now.
Crushing it, yeah.
This in. But do you ever care about the theme? Do you ever say, "Oh, what a good theme"?
I guess I kind of do. I do like the like heroes versus villains kind of stuff, like when they have like returning players. I like when they have returning players, I guess, when there's a theme. But honestly, like, it just seems like such a reach always. Like, what team was Allie even on? She's like a YouTube.
Allie was a hustler.
Yeah, it just seemed like, okay, like, we found these people that we think would be good. Now, like, what can we break them up into? And it just seems super, like, arbitrary and weird. And then from just, like, the heroes and the healers and the themes, then we have, like, the weird tribe names that are hard to remember and confusing. And just, like, the yellow, the red, and the blue team. Like,
yeah,
please,
I'm for sure with you on that. For sure. And you're completely right that that's, I believe, with this cast, literally what they did. They had the 18 people that they wanted, and then they were like, okay, what arbitrary divisions can we come up with? So it's not like this is an earnest effort of, you know, from the jump trying to figure out how heroes versus healers versus hustlers like would play out. It's not like they were casting with that in mind. They were just trying to figure out some kind of remotely arguable way of splitting them.
Yeah, and I always think it's weird, like, at least when it's like heroes and villains, like, there's a very like easy distinction. But I sometimes think, like, when they try to do like themes like this, it's like to have like the like casual fans be like, oh, like, these are people that are like me, these are people that are doing this. But I don't know anybody who walks around in their life calling themselves like a healer or like a hero would be even weirder, I feel like. So it's kind of like, I don't know, this is weird. But it does set it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to identify with someone who's just a millennial because that is literally, there's no debate about that, and it's not pretentious to walk around calling. I guess it kind of is if you're a millennial.
It's just standard millennial behavior.
It's, yeah, very much so. How do you feel about Cole? I know he's very pretty.
I was super high on Cole at first, but Cole has seemed to have done everything he can to make himself, like, unlikable. I don't know, he seems like the equivalent of having like a golden retriever on the beach with you, like really like sweet and cute to look at, but like he's eating the food, like I don't know what the deal with it all is, but there's certainly like, it seems like what happened was they have Cole come in, they know everybody's gonna like him because he's hot, and now they're trying to make us not like him, and I don't know why, but it's working.
Yeah, that's,
a, for
that's
me.
The question, like, still so far, is it seems like they have, after a good start with Cole, it seemed like going off, you know, everyone seeming to trust him initially on that yellow team beach. He's got this great bond going with Jessica, Joe, when he found that first idol, brought Cole into the mix. And now he really is, it does feel like, seem to be getting tanked here. So I'm with you. It feels like Cole, it almost feels like the most doomed person to me. Out of this whole cast.
Yeah, no, Cole's not going to win.
Yeah. Do you have any strong take at all on Ashley or JP at this point? Or would you be able to pick either of them out of a lineup?
My strong point is to you, who I think last week was talking about how likable you thought Ashley was. That's insane. Like, there is something about her that is just so unlikable. It's ridiculous. Like, I am just truly rooting for her to fail. I don't know why.
Wow.
But, like, she's... I don't know what it is, but she's not likable.
That's a fire take.
I'm sure she's really nice. I feel bad because I don't know her, obviously, but she's not likable.
Okay.
But I feel like it's okay. People would say that about me if I was on Survivor.
But the thing is, like, it feels like I just don't have any idea where you're getting that from.
No.
This has been a recurring thing as we've like texted back and forth about the episodes, is you like just hating Ashley.
Well,
I thought it might have subsided. I thought you might have like gone off the screen enough that you had kind of gotten over that, but apparently not.
No, like I was truly like rooting against her in the immunity like idol stuff. There's just something, she hasn't really done anything besides like she got yelled at by Alan. And then, like, I feel like since then she hasn't done anything, which is maybe, like, the strategy, but I don't know. I'm not into her, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Much like I said about Devin, and this is, like, the third or fourth time that I've said this about Ashley over the course of this season, is I think she just doesn't have that kind of big personality that they want to highlight, you know, on a super regular basis, the same way that they have characters they always go back to as like narrators.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like if she went on to do well or win or play a big role later on, this is more or less how they would make her look. They would have her pop up from time to time and for my money look good. But it is very like the whole reason I wanted to have you on is to get the less invested perspective on it, because like I know a lot about Ashley just from hearing so much about her preseason and following along with all of the press coverage over the course of this season so far, whereas you're just tuning in on Wednesday, so I definitely don't want to make it seem like your opinion's invalid at all. It's the value that you add here, I think.
I like adding value as the casual. But I mean, to be clear, like they could give her a great edit next week and I would probably be in on her. Like I like sway for sure. I don't know. Something about her I'm just not down with.
And that goes back to something like a principle of like reading the edit that I think I don't bring up enough, which is I think they know that the casual fans will get over a bad week or two if there are another like 7 or 8 episodes before the finale and it's going to matter. Like Anna, again, this is a season you didn't watch, but the guy who won Millennials versus Gen X, they like buried him right around merge time. And then by the end of it, everyone was still rooting for him again because people had long since forgotten about everything that happened on the merge. So I always around this time of the season, I think it's worth taking any episode that looks somewhat bad with a grain of salt, because I think this would be the time that they're really into like casting doubt on people. So
yeah, I also just don't know if they've done anything to make her look bad, to be fair. Like, this might just be like a me thing, but
that's what I'm saying. I really think it's a you thing. I don't think Ashley's really done anything less than good, honestly.
If she wins, we'll see, but I don't know. I mean, I definitely like forget about things that happen in the beginning of the season, in the middle of the season, even like a couple weeks back. So that's definitely true. Like, as far as like reading an edit or whatever, I've just like I said, like recently become aware that like television is edited for me to feel a certain way.
And the only other person that I think we haven't hit on a little bit yet, is Lauren. How are you feeling about Lauren so far?
You know, I don't like think of Lauren when I think about this season, but I kind of like, I like her. Like, she's kind of snarky in her, like confessionals. Like, she definitely like has some personality, which I like. I mean, she doesn't seem like she's been doing a whole lot besides like, she kind of is the one that they show talking crap on people.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that, but, I don't know if she'll win, but it seems like people don't mind her.
Yeah, no, Lauren has been maybe the biggest surprise of the season for me. I thought she was going to be one of the early boots, like a huge, huge percentage of the time. But now that she's at the merge, I really don't see how Lauren's getting voted out anytime soon. I think she could be in there for the long haul, and I'm frankly really looking forward to that. I think Lauren could be a real treat now that she's, I think, going to find herself in a much safer position than she's ever been in to this point, and really in there maybe even calling some shots down the line. I think that could be a lot of fun, is the emergence of Lauren as a power player.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'm here for that for sure. I'm into Lauren.
Yeah, so... winner pick at this point, I know you mentioned Ben and Chrissy. Is that where you would be thinking still?
Yeah, I think so. I really wish Desi would win, but I don't think she will.
Do you have a preference between Ben and Chrissy?
No, honestly, they're like pretty interchangeable to me. Like, I guess like I kind of feel like when I like try and think strategically about like the season and like how they set it up and heroes and healers and blah, 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 I kind of feel like it's set up for like Ben to win, to be like the like American hero, and he wins Survivor, and like that edit with like the PTSD, which was really interesting to see. And I like Ben. Like, I don't think that they've shown us anything to not like Ben, and he was a big part of last episode. So I guess I think that he is maybe a little bit more likely to win than Chrissy, but she's also seems to be kind of like calling the shots and playing pretty hard. So,
yeah, I certainly at this point wouldn't be unhappy at all with seeing either of
them.
Yeah,
me either.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that I still am rooting for and would be totally fine with seeing win. So, Anna, thank you so much for coming on.
Colin, thank you so much for having me. I feel like I've made it. So if you need any more like casual opinions, I'm here for it. I'll keep watching a couple days late to remain casual.
Sounds good. Do you have a like a Twitter or Instagram? I'm not going to plug your Twitter.
I don't have a Twitter.
Okay, good.
I deleted it because you used to tell me how bad it was.
It was awful.
But yeah, if you want to follow my Instagram, it's just Anna Klemperer, just AnnaKlemperer. Premium content, none of which is related to Survivor.
All right. There you go. Anna, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day at work. I'll talk to you very soon.
All right. Bye, Colin. Thanks.
Bye-bye. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken.
Brad Culpepper. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Tune out now.
All right, so a big thank you both to Austin Trupp and to Casual Anna for coming on the show this week to talk to me. And now let's dive into the edit. And I want to go a little bit of a different direction than we have been for the first whatever it was, 6 or 7 episodes of The Edit Zone, where I know we've been focusing a lot on Ben and Chrissy, and I've been probably overly confident about their chances of being the long-term major players, like just on the grounds that it seems these last several seasons, the story has really been told through the eyes of the two people who end up being in the finals and getting votes, or being the red herring potentially in the case of like Ken McNichol, where we get these kind of pairs of people really spiking visibility wise much more so than the rest of the cast. And to me, it's always been Ben and Chrissy. And this week, I want to talk about someone a little different. And we'll talk a bit about Ben and Chrissy later, but I really want to dive into someone who's come up already. And this is as I've said during the part with Austin, this is overdue, a deep dive on the case for Devin. And I want to give a big shout out to Jeff C., who sent us an email this week that is really going to structure how all of this goes, because I do think a compelling case can certainly be made, as Jeff C. will go on to lay out. And of course, if you want to be emailing us, it is domandcolin@gmail.com. So let's talk through this, because Devin is certainly a name I've heard floating around for a really long time. He just hasn't been on my radar because I think been so focused on Ben and Chrissy to this point. And we also got a dusting in there of Allie when she was in the game, for sure. She was near the top of a lot of people's radar. I know this time last week I was talking about Jessica moving way up in my rankings. So maybe we're just cursing Devin here and he's going to be the boot next week. But I do think, whether this is real or just fake news, fan fiction, whatever, this is really worth getting into. So let's do that. And Jeff really structures this email episode by episode, and I think it is worthwhile to just kind of go through this point by point, the case for Devin. And I've condensed the email a bit, but there is still quite a bit that I think Jeff is making a lot of sense on. And first and foremost, in episode 1, apparently Devin was the only hustler shown introducing himself to his tribe in that initial camp scene. He told us about being a surf instructor and that he doesn't make a lot of money. So we at least right away get to see Devin, and while we didn't get the sequence of confessionals that Dom and I always spend so much time focusing on, that tend to kick off the premiere before the theme song, that just didn't exist on this season, this might be the closest thing. Is it, you know, the next best thing, I guess, is being shown early on at your tribe. And apparently Devin was the only one shown really setting himself up early on with the healers. And then furthermore, we get Ryan interjected saying that Devin made a really good first impression. And Ryan, of course, is going to go on to be one of the most visible people and one of the narrators of the season so far, at least. Episode 2, Devin correctly points out that Simone needs to get voted out because of her challenge performance, and Simone does in fact get voted out. I think that's important, that it doesn't seem like they would make the winner look bad or look like they were barking up the wrong tree. And that will come back into play in episode 3 when they go back, when this Hustlers tribe goes back to Tribal Council to vote out Patrick. Devin was the only one of the Hustlers saying he wants to keep Lauren and not Patrick. Apparently both Allie and Ryan said they'd rather keep Patrick. So when Patrick does end up leaving, I think the math that maybe the editors want us to do is Devin was had a big hand in swinging that, when he was the one pitching that idea against two other people. And then we see that idea go through. I do agree with what Jeff's saying, that this could easily be argued as being presented as Devin's call here and not necessarily Ryan's. And then episode 4, Devin is shown immediately seeing through Joe's bullshit, which basically kills any chance of a red herring, where winners don't generally, they're not usually involved in that kind of thing, where they're shown as like intentional players. And Devin, I think that's like the key to what Devin's edit has been, where It seems like the editors are going out of their way to make it clear that Devin is thinking for himself. And we'll have more examples of this come up down the line. But he said very early on, in particular with respect to Joe, he's talking about, I don't know if I can really trust Joe, but this is the first time I felt like, shoot, I might be going home next. So I've got to figure out my next move. And the edit here, I think, made Joe look pretty bad and has continued, frankly, to make Joe look like probably someone that would be viewed as a big issue for most people in the game. And this ties into another point that Jeff makes, which is, it seems like they're almost rushing to give Devin credit for Joe's eventual boot. Like, they have been setting up this kind of Devin and Joe rivalry is at least dating back to as far as episode 5, where we hear a lot from Devin about how he wants Joe out. And again, it just kind of validates that Devin is at least thinking about his own game, which isn't always the case for a lot of people, particularly people in this kind of archetype. It seems that they rarely, honestly, go out of their way to give the Devins of the world unnecessary credit game-wise. And he's often seen talking about what he thinks is good for his game and shown being very deliberate, I think. And furthermore, we get validation in the form of Jeff Probst in these previously ons is mentioning Devin, is saying at Levu, Devin held all the power. And this is the vote after his vote was nullified, where he ended up not even getting to vote. Jessica used the advantage to cancel it, and they almost skip over that part in the previously on where Jeff makes it seem like Devin just had all the power, and they almost don't even mention what the twist was. And furthermore, back when this was happening, Devin had a confessional saying, "I have all the power in my hands," which is rarely something you want to hear someone say on Survivor. Nine times out of 10, it seems like that ends up getting flipped on them. But when you have Jeff Probst coming in the next week's previously on saying at Levu, Devin held all the power, that seems pretty validating as far as I can tell. Another good point that we've seen as far as what they're trying to present as far as Devin's intentionality within the game, if that's a word, sorry if it's not, is Devin was shown, as far as we can tell, willing to go to rocks on Ashley's behalf. And Jeff points out, and I think it is a good point, that the producers seem to view that as like the sign of a great modern Survivor player, is the willingness to make these big moves. And even in a spot where Devin didn't even end up casting a vote, it does seem like they were trying to make it look like Devin was in there, and Ashley too, to be fair, but certainly Devin, first and foremost, willing to make a big move and go to rocks and really exercise some agency over his own game and really be in there playing to win. All of these things add up to me. Like if we could cut this list down by 60% or whatever, I don't know how compelling the case would be. But as this continues, I think Jeff just really make some compelling arguments. And then I guess in this merge episode, one interesting point that we've certainly seen before is Devin was the one who now notably got that drone shot as he was sitting there starving on that beach. We have seen in the past, famously, Tina Wesson talking about how much she could go for some Doritos, or Sandra talking about in Heroes versus Villains how much she loves the Outback Steakhouse. These sponsor rewards, the winners tend to get some endorsement time, and it really was presented that Outback Steakhouse totally saved Devin's life here, and he never would have been able to carry on were it not for the grace and kindness and quality of the Outback Steakhouse, of course. And he says in his final scene at that new Levu beach before they end up going to the merge, he says, "This is the saddest point in my life right now. My brain feels dead. Every single one of my limbs feels like it weighs 1,000 pounds. The game is a lot more real than I thought, and I'm going into this next reward challenge. If we don't win, I don't know what I'm going to do." And then miraculously, our sponsor, Outback Steakhouse, comes in and saves the day for Devin. And he says about that, "Oh my God, I am just in perfect bliss right now. To make the merge is such an accomplishment, and to go from such a low this morning to being with all these amazing people and to go and eat this Outback feast with such happiness, I feel like a king, man. This is the life." And then I think Jeff makes a good point that this is the exact kind of shenanigans the editors would do. So I think as this game continues, I'm really going to have my eyes peeled on Devin. I think I would probably have Devin as my number two winner candidate. I'm still not willing to come off of Ben as number one, just because he's been so visible. But I think at this point, while I would take Chrissy in a last longer against Devin, like I think she's more likely to be there in the finals a higher percentage of the time. If I had to pick one of them where only winning mattered, I would take Devin over Chrissy at this point. And I don't even know, frankly, who else would be in that next tier. I think Ben and Devin are my pretty clear top tier at this point. And this time next week, I could easily see myself saying, okay, if Devin has another big week here and Ben has another bad one, Devin might be my new number one. Now, there is a possibility still that I'm getting that that the Devon people are the new Ken people, where they're falling for the trap that I fell for with Ken McNichol, where I still remain adamant up until final eight, final seven, somewhere in there, Ken was glowing, and it was exactly this rationale, this positive manipulation, the Michelle Fitzgerald logic that was correct, that we were applying to Ken, that proved to not be correct. And furthermore, the following season, I spent a long time applying that to Brad Culpepper and was once again incorrect. So I do think it is possible that that is in play for the Devon edit as well. But and part of why I think that is, it seems like it's been a recent stretch where Ben has just now started not looking so great. And I was reminded the other day that Adam Klein, during that Millennials versus Gen X merge, I remember calling it in real time, saying, if Adam is our eventual winner, this is the single worst episode any eventual winner has ever received on Survivor. And not just that merge boot, but the following week when Taylor was voted out, we were so set. We spent the entire pre-merge saying it must be Adam or Ken. And then as a result of those two horrendous episodes for Adam, we just ruled him out. And that is what focused us. We said, okay, it just must be Ken by process of elimination, because this would be the worst set of episodes any future winner's ever gotten on Survivor if Adam is that future winner. And that was at that merge time. And now that we're at the merge time here, it wouldn't surprise me to see them go back to that same trick of starting to cast some doubt on the people that had really been the glowing favorites before. So I am still, for that reason, not ready to bring Ben down from number one for me. I think at this point I'm still with the gun to my head, the metaphorical gun to my head, probably still going to be calling a Ben over Chrissy final. And as I got into a little bit with Austin, I guess I'm penciling Lauren in there at this point tentatively as the potential third place finalist, who may even go on to be the final juror if we do get that tie come in. Lauren, the rural juror, could end up breaking that tie if that comes in. That could be some of the best fan fiction Survivor podcasters have come up with in a while. But so that would be where I am at. Although, as I've mentioned, I think if anyone is getting in the way of that at this point, I frankly don't see how it's anyone other than Devon. I'm really coming down on Ryan and the other two people that I thought were viable winner candidates through the pre-merge in Allie and Jessica are no longer in the game. So while we could see someone like Dr. Mike, I guess I would still like leave the door open for there. I'm trying to roll through and see if there's anyone else that I even really at this point would have in the double digit percentage of win equity. I do think things could turn around for Chrissy for sure, but at this point I would be looking pretty squarely at Ben, Chrissy with some equity to win, but probably more likely a losing finalist for me. So really just Ben and Devon would have the overwhelming majority of my winner equity. So I don't think there's much else from the edit that is jumping to mind. And again, I somehow managed to do this in one take, so I'm just going to get out of here before I screw this up. Thank you guys so much for listening this week. We should be back next week in the form of Dom, hopefully with someone else, because I'm going to be gone living out of a hotel for the next week, and I won't be back until Tuesday. So that's just not going to be possible for me next week. But we should hopefully have something coming for you on at least the Survivor front next week once Dom gets back to England. There's a possibility, I suppose, that I don't even know what Dom's schedule is, but maybe that we may have our first week off in a really long time, but we'll hopefully get something out there. In the meantime, I suppose I'll say it once again. I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. Dom is at DomHRV, and you can email us domandcolin@gmail.com. Thank you guys for sticking with us through all three parts of this week, and we will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.